Miħor tlieta punt seba campus jiena Colin Fitz, illum fil-programm Minajnejn Barranin, għandi għalikom programm daqsxejn differenti bis-soltu, għandi għalikom siltiet minn intervisti differenti, jew li sibt fuq l-internet, jew illi għamiltom jien tul is-snin li jgħu fuq campus miħor tlieta punt seba, u li huma ma' Barranin li jew żaru Malta, jew ġew Malta u baqgħu joqogħdu għaw. Nis interessanti, tkun intervista l-instamad xi darba biss u naħseb li huwa xira li ninkludihom jew ninkludi siltiet minn dawn l-intervisti fi programm wieħed ta' Minajnejn Barranin biex ikollna wkoll l-impressjoni ta' Malta ta' dawn in-nies varjati f'din is-sensiela wkoll. Issa qed infirraba sensiela ta' Minajnejn Barranin, kont għamilt sensiela fl-2015 u mbagħad komplejt sensiela madwar sena sentejn ilu bdejna sensiela mill-ġdid u issa qegħdin fir-raba' sensiela u kif tafu intervistajt lil bosta nies interessanti li għandhom konnessjoni kbira ma' Malta li jgħixu hawnhekk ġew minn barra għamlu Malta lid-dar tagħhom jew Maltin li jgħixu barra minn pajjiżna għal bosta snin jew Maltin li huma nofsom Maltin, per eżempju, u nofsom ta' discendenza oħra, u għalhekk jistgħu jitkellmu bil-lenti jew mill-lenti ta' Minajnejn Barranin. L-ewwel silta li ħansemmalkom hija xi ħaġa li sibt kombinazzjoni li laqtitni u li tatni l-idea għal dan il-programm din il-ġimgħa stess. Qed nirrekordja l-programm fi frar tal-2025 għal fini tal-arkivji. U jiena dilettant kbir tal-programmi li llum issib fuq il-YouTube, intervisti, podcasts u programmi bħal dawn. Jiena wkoll dilettant tal-istorja tal-mużika u l-istorja tal-films u televiżjoni. U allura meta nara xi intervista ta' fint il-YouTube jissuġġerilek programmi li jaħseb li jinteressaw lilek. U appuntu l-YouTube kellu raġun meta suġġeri li intervista mal-attur John Ratzenberger ma fi programm li jismu Hollywood I'm Still Here. Issa dan John Ratzenberger jekk tara wiċċu jiena ċert li tarfuh. Għaliex kien persuna regolari, kien attur regolari fis-sensiela Cheers li kienet tidher fuq Television Malta fis-snin 80 nhar ta' sibt filgħaxija. Kummedja magħrufa bħala waħda mill-aktar sensieliet komiċi ta' kull żmien li ħarġu mill-Istati Uniti. John Ratzenberger kien jagħmel il-parti ta' Cliff Clavin fis-sensiela Cheers. Però kien ukoll anzi f'dawn l-aħħar snin ta' il-vuċi tiegħu għal karattri animati f'sensieliet bħal Cars, The Incredibles u għamel ukoll il-karattru ta' Ham fis-sensiela ta' films ferm popolari Toy Story. John Ratzenberger kien għamel periodu fil-lejt mimi snin sabajn u fil-bidu ta' snin 80 jiex l-Ingilterra u peress li kien wieħed mill-ftit atturi Amerikani li jiexu fil-Ingilterra kull meta kien ikun hemm xi film Amerikan jew film kbir illi kellu bżonn xi karattri Amerikani f'dan li jieħdu sehem f'dan il-film awtomatikament kienu jittuħ il-parti għaliex kien qiegħed hemm floktoqgħod iġib attur Amerikan mill-Amerika. Allura da John Ratzenberger spiċċa biex ħasem f'bosta films kbar bħal A Bridge Too Far, Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back, Gandhi u anka Superman 2 fost ħafna oħrajn. Rajnieħu wkoll fis-sensiela televiżiva Secret Army pereżempju. Il-fattu li John Ratzenberger, peress li kien bbażat l-Ingilterra, anke meta kien ikun hemm xi film Ingliż illi kien ħajkun miġbut jew jinġibed barra mill-Ingilterra, pereżempju f'Malta, kienu jkollu jgħidulu. U dan spiċċa biex ħasem film li nġibed f'pajjiżna lejt 1970 illi kien jismu Warlords of Atlantis. Da xejta introduzzjoni twila dwar dan John Ratzenberger, imma nixtieqkom tisimgħu il-vuċi tiegħu, il-mod kif jesprimi l-eċitament tiegħu dwar il-fatt li kien idur id-dinja biex jirreċta f'dak il-perjodu, meta kienu jqabduh isifer biex imur jirreċta għall-films li qed jinġibdu barra mill-Ingilterra u jisemmi lill-Malta. U peress li smajna dan l-aħħar Gladiator 2, dik id-daqsxejta kontroversja dwar id-direttur illi qal xi ħaġa dwar it-turizmu f'Malta li ma tantx niżlet tajjeb, ħin nisamgħu lil John Ratzenberger u l-attitudni tiegħu lej pajjiżna.
I understand you like to travel.
That I like to travel?
I was watching a podcast that you just did recently with Ted Danson.
Oh, right, yeah.
Woody Harrelson. And they were talking to you about a trip you recently took. It was like an 8,000-mile total.
I've always wanted to travel since I was a kid, so grammar school. I love maps. I love what's there? What's Madagascar? Where's the Saragossa Sea? Stuff. And there was always books around the house. My father was a great traveler. He didn't travel. He was a truck driver. I guess that's as much as he traveled. But through him, I think, because of maps and stories he told about World War II and the Philippines. And he didn't say much about the war, but the geography he talked. And I love traveling. Just even when I was living in England for 10 years, I used to, when I got offered a film or something, I'd see, okay, where's it filming? And I would pick the location. I didn't care what the film was about. I went, Malta, oh, yeah, how cool. India, because I did Gandhi with Richard Attenborough.
U hemmhekk smajna lill-attur John Ratzenberger f'dawn l-aħħar ġimgħat f'intervista fil-programm Hollywood I'm Still Here fuq YouTube. Veru mill-vuċi tiegħu instema' li ħappjeċir f'pajjiżna kien post eżotiku differenti li ġie jżur grazzi għall-film Warlords of Atlantis. Fl-istess sensiela Hollywood I'm Still Here, ftit ġimgħat qabel ma ġie intervistat John Ratzenberger, kien ġie intervistat Harry Hamlin li kien l-attur prinċipali flimkien ma' atturi bħal Laurence Olivier u Ursula Andress fil-film Clash of the Titans. Ejjien nisamgħu il-referenza lej Malta illi għamel Harry Hamlin f'din l-intervista Hollywood I'm Still Here literalment ftit tal-ġimgħat ilu lejn tmiem is-sena 2024.
But yeah, there's a story about the Kraken and Medusa that's kind of interesting too for Clash of the Titans wise. They came to me the day that we were going to shoot the scene where I cut off her head. We were in Malta and we were shooting in an abandoned warehouse where they'd converted it into the set of her lair. And I was in my trailer at about 7 o'clock in the morning that morning, and somebody knocked on the door and said, "Excuse me, but we got a telex from London last night. You can no longer cut her head off with the sword." I said, what? And they said, yeah, they've determined that it would get an X rating for violence with teenagers in England if you're holding the sword that actually cuts her head off. And I tried to imagine that, and then I tried to imagine, well, how am I going to get her head then? And they said, well, we've got it all figured out. You're going to take your shield and throw it like a frisbee against the wall. It's going to bounce off the wall and inadvertently cut her head off, and then you're going to grab her head and you'll have it. And I imagined that for a moment, and I said, well, in that case, you're going to have to find somebody else to play Perseus, because I won't do that. And I went into my trailer and I said, I'm sorry, I'm going to cut her head off with a sword, or I'm not going to do the scene. And they freaked out. And we were somewhere way outside of Valletta, which is the capital of Malta. And of course, there were no cell phones in those days. And they had this recalcitrant actor who was about to quit the movie. And I said, I will quit the movie. I will go home tonight to L.A. if you insist on me doing this, because I'm not going to do it. And man, they freaked out. I was in the trailer. They unplugged the electricity from the trailer. So that it was a really hot day in the summer in Malta. They tried to kind of smoke me out, get me to come out, and they kept sending people into the trailer to get me to come out. They sent in the first AD, and then they sent in the cinematographer, and they sent in all these different people from the crew. And every time somebody came in, they came out on my side, because I said, you guys, the myth is that he cuts her head off with the sword. Give it to him by Zeus. Why the f*** do I have the sword if I don't use it to cut her head off? You know, and so by the end of the day, 4 p.m. or so, they gave in. And they said, okay, well, we don't want to lose the day, and we'll take our chances with the X rating. And, of course, it didn't get an X rating for violence. And if you could imagine that scene being that way in the film, it would have tanked. The movie would have been a total, would have been a disaster. So even though they never thanked me for making that decision, they ought to have. They never talked to me again and the producers never talked to me again for 25 years. After 25 years, Ray Harryhausen did call me up and ask me to join him on stage for a presentation in Hollywood when he was coming in. But it took 25 years because they were so upset with me.
Don't take it personally.
I didn't. Please. I certainly didn't. They didn't like the fact that, I fought with them the whole time. The entire time we shot, they just wanted to make money. They wanted to shoot it fast and furious. And I said, well, wait, there's ways to make this movie actually better than what's on the page, and I would insist on doing certain things a certain way. And they thought it was, they thought I should be doing whatever they said, put it that way.
L'attur Harry Hamlin mill-film Clash of the Titans, il-film oriġinali li kien inġibed f'Malta lura lejt 1970 u fil-bidu ta' snin 80. Persuna li kelli l-fortuna li n-intervista tul snin tiegħi ta' ħidma bħala xandar kien il-kantant Tony Hadley tal-grupp famuż Spandau Ballet. Tony Hadley kien ġie jagħti kunċert f'pajjiżna u jien nisimgħu silta minn din l-intervista.
What's happened is that I've just finished an album, obviously. It's just come out in the UK. It's only been out a couple of weeks. And we got the invitation from Air Malta and Victoria Hotel, thank you very much, people, to come out and do a few gigs. But they're very much impromptu. It's not, we're not doing a full-scale tour, we're just doing a few gigs in Malta, we're just going to have a bit of fun, and we're just doing a few gigs in the Middle East, in Dubai and Bahrain. Few gigs in the UK as well, but I don't want to go out with a proper full tour probably until next spring or summer, and that's when I want to set up a proper production, lights, and that's a big stage show. But at the moment we're just doing a few club gigs just to routine the band and have some fun. I've never been to Malta and the sun was shining, and I'd rather be here doing a few gigs than stuck in England at the moment, so it seemed like a good idea. And everyone's been really friendly, and it's not, if anyone's expecting the full show, no, this is kind of jam session. But I think that's good, because normally people see most artists in a real kind of especially as I was in Spain, I barely for 70 years, in the big arena type vibe. So this is kind of a bit different, and we'll just have some fun with the audience and some fun with ourselves, right? And a party afterwards.
What do you think about Malta? Is it the first time here?
Oh, it's a terrible place. Oh, it's a shocking place. You know, like, oh, the sunshine all the time. The women are walking around with hardly anything on. Well, it's great, isn't it? it's a seaside place. And I've only been here. This is the sort of first couple of days. But I'm having a great time. Everyone's been very friendly.
Thank you.
Quebec smajna lil Tony Hadley, il-kantant tal-grupp Spandau Ballet, illum madux il-kantant ta' homa du jdur id-dinja jagħti kunċerti bħala solist, imma Tony Hadley kien f'pajjiżna. F'dak iż-żmien dak ir-recording kien ġi reġistrat lura fis-snin 90. Kantanti ħor li kelli il-fortuna li n-intervista huwa l-kantant Sal Solo li kien imexxi l-grupp Classics Novo li fis-snin bidu ta' snin 80 kellhom xi suċċess fir-Renju Unit, kellhom ħafna suċċess pajjiżi bħal Polonja, il-Jugoslavja u il-Finlandja u l-Iżvezja kif ukoll fil-Portugal. Kien it-tip ta' grupp li kien aktar interessat li jdur id-dinja u jagħti l-kunċerti milli jkollu suċċess fil-klassifika, għalkemm xi ftit ta' suċċess fil-klassifiċi internazzjonali kellhom. Sal Solo u l-grupp tiegħu Classics Novo kienu ġew jagħtu kunċert f'Malta lura fl-1982, kunċert famuż li kien sar f'Tinje. Sal Solo inaqgħad mal-grupp Classics Novo mill-ġdid lura fl-2023 biex jirrekordjaw album ġdid wara 40 sena ta' assenza mix-xena. Jiena kont għamilt kuntatt miegħu u rnexxieli nirrekordja din l-intervista fejn ukoll għamel referenza lejn pajjiżna.
Right, so Classics Nouveau, we established you had a big hit in the UK in 82 with Is It a Dream, you were a hit in America, a smaller hit, but still, nevertheless, you got some American fans thanks to MTV. And then you had the whole touring thing, you started touring, because you were massive in Poland, in Yugoslavia, many other countries. But do you remember how your trip to Malta came about?
Well, that was probably 1983, I'm thinking.
I believe it was 82. And it was a concert in a place called Tinier, which is now one big hotel. It's been built up. But it was in an old fortress, which dates like 400 or 500 years, built by the Knights of St. John. And then the British forces added to it during the time of the British Empire. But once the British forces had left Malta in the 70s, that fortress was turned over to bands. They had their garages to practice in, and that whole community had this sort of was given money by the government to organize a youth festival. So there were some Maltese bands playing, and then they had enough money to bring over a band from abroad, and your band was the one chosen. As far as I can make out.
Well, there are a couple of things. One is that, as I mentioned, we were with EMI. Mm-hmm. And so EMI had pretty much all the biggest bands in the world. They had Queen, they had U2, they had Pink Floyd. And so they had the reach. They were in every country. Secondly, our manager, Falcon, he was not like a typical business kind. He was like a sort of, he was an artist, really, because his father was the sculptor to the Queen.
Oh.
And he has lots of famous Winston Churchill statues around London and other cities of the world. And his mother was a poet. His sister is called Electra, just to give you an idea. So he found it very fascinating, the idea that with a rock and roll band, you could just go around the world. I mean, I think a little bit later on, the Police were like this. You know, they found it fascinating to go to India and Arab countries and whatever. And so we didn't really focus so much on England or America as other bands did, because we were not really particularly interested in making a fortune or something. If we'd been going for the biggest business venture, then we probably would have focused on the States. But we just found it so fascinating to go to places where people typically don't go. And so we did go to India, as you said. We went to Poland. We were probably the first Western band into Poland, I think, or maybe the second. They told me there was a heavy metal band called Budgie that was in before us. And yeah, I mean, so many places.
Yugoslavia, and Scandinavia, Portugal.
Yeah. Our first silver disc was actually in in, well, it was called Yugoslavia then, obviously, Iceland. Mm-hmm. I think we were number one in Iceland. And today is really interesting because our fans who post online, they're posting from places like Estonia, Uruguay, you know, places that I barely even know where they are. And that's so very interesting.
It is. Your memories of Malta, well, you only spent a couple of days here, or maybe even one day, probably.
Well, the place, probably more than one day. The place that you were talking about, the fort, isn't it by the sea?
Yes, that's right. Yes, opposite the capital city, Valletta.
I seem to remember it being a very beautiful setting, and all of the sea as a backscape. And there was one not so good thing, and that is I remember it was very smelly. I don't know if Malta still is, but we're talking obviously that many years ago. But they seem to be having some problem with the water. They told me that I guess they would get seawater and try and refine it to make it
yes. There was a water purifying plant built around that area, possibly being built at that time.
Oh, that must have been it then. Like it really smelled bad.
Oh dear. Okay.
But other than that, you know, the fans were really very very nice. The food was good, and so we enjoyed our visit.
Did you get to see other parts of Malta? Do you remember at all? Perhaps taken to Mdina or any of the sort of historic buildings.
Yeah, I don't think we did because back in those days, if we were doing a tour, it would be very much, you know, here, next day to another country, and kind of like that. So you rarely get timed to be a tourist.
A friend of mine who was a member of one of the support bands, the Characters, who played as your support, Gino McAuliffe, he went on to play with a band called High and Dry in Germany and is now best friends with members of Iron Maiden and quite a rocker. But he remembers you and he said you dressed like Nosferatu. You had that kind of look, and that you were very interested in the history of Malta, and that he was explaining to you sort of that's a church and that etc. So that's the impression that he got of you, that you were into Malta's history, that you were keen to learn about Malta while you were here.
Well, of course, we already did talk a little bit about history and my interest, because something that traveling the world did for me is to kind of enculturate me. Because at school, I was a horrible student. I was only interested in music and art, maybe English, because I wanted to write songs and dismissed everything else. But when I started traveling around, for instance, you mentioned Yugoslavia. When we were in Yugoslavia the first time, I remember seeing tanks. They weren't active. They were left over from some kind of war or something. But you're walking along the street, and then suddenly you confront a real tank. It's a bit of a shock.
Of course.
You don't normally see that kind of thing in London, you know. Or when we went to India and you see beggars in the streets everywhere and sleeping on benches or whatever, it just completely opened my mind. It was the education that has made me the person I am today.
Footballer Dwight York kien f'pajjiżna ftit ta' snin ilu, infakarkom li din l-edizzjoni ta' Mingħajnejn Barranin qed tiġi rrekordjata fl-2025. Ftit ta' snin ilu Dwight York kien inġib pajjiżna mill-Malta Football Association biex jipparteċipa f'avveniment tal-Fair Play. Dwight York kien player famuż tal-Manchester United huwa ċittadin ta' Trinidad and Tobago u fl-2006 kien anke lab għal pajjiżu fit-tazza tad-dinja tal-2006.
Intervista li kontam iltima Dwight York kienet instama darba unek fwiħet bil-programmi tiħaj fuq Campus 103.7 xiera li naġon nisamaw silta minna awnek waqt din l-edizzjoni ta' Minajnejn Barrani.
I like the VAR thing. I like that joke there. That was pretty cool.
That's much appreciated. Thank you. I work for the University of Malta radio station.
Yeah.
So just like a couple of quotes, please. First of all, what's your opinion of Malta?
I think it's a fantastic country. I mean, I've been reminded I've been here twice, but I can only remember once.
Was it to play?
They said I played. I can't remember playing, honestly. It's been so long. I've been playing football for so long. But no, it's the little time we've been here has been great. The people are wonderful. The country is beautiful, as you can imagine. The hospitality has been absolutely first class, so there is no issues. I really enjoy your country.
And tell us a little bit about the anti-racism strategy, the anti-racism efforts that have been done while you've been here, and your message.
Yeah, I think it's very straightforward. Red for Equal is an initiative from Man United point of view, where we strongly believe in equality, the discrimination, and injustice. I think that, you know, the inclusion is very important in the whole aspect of it. You know, we need, you know, not to be judged by the color of your skin. And I'm a firm example coming from the Caribbean and having to make it all the way at the football chain and playing for the greatest club in the world. It shows it can be done. And people should not. I know you have a few tragic moments here in your country just to highlight the challenges around the world. And it's great to see that the government is really taking this initiative and really putting it out there to the Maldives people. I hope the Maldives people embrace it. And it's all about education. You've got to educate people to understand that that discrimination and injustice and inequality does not stand in society anymore. You know, I always say life is too short and you have to enjoy these moments. But equally, we have to embrace the challenge ahead. And if we can educate people a little bit more in terms of going forward, I would like to see that happening. But there's still some work to be done.
You're from quite a small footballing country, but you made it to the World Cup. What was that like?
Well, that was incredible. I mean, when you think of the success that I had at my club level, you think of a population of 1.2 million people, and that's all we are. And to make it in the World Cup with some of the mighties of this footballing world, it's... You know, I don't think words can actually describe what that felt like. And despite all the success that I had as a player, being patriotic and representing my country and what it means to the people, not just of Trinidad and Tobago, but certainly in the Caribbean, because we are like of a community as a whole, it was probably one of the most, I would say, rewarding achievement in my playing career.
And finally, what do you think of the Manchester United supporters in Malta? There are so many of them.
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, I was told, I can remember coming here in 2000, just before when I signed for Man United, I came here. The manager and I came here, I remember it. And then apparently I came again, but I couldn't remember the last time. But nevertheless, you know, what Manchester United brings, the support around the world, it's a global club, it's a historical club, a club with deep history. And you know that you've seen the playing side of it, you've seen behind the scene now where you've seen all the supporters. And, you know, so I have to say I've been very lucky in traveling the world, but the Maltese Supporters Club is probably one of the best ones I've seen around the world. So credit to them. Continue to support the club. We're very grateful to have such a great support in this part of the world as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jina Colin Fitz u dan huwa Minajnejn Barranin, program da xej differenti bis-soltu, qed nisimgħu siltiet minn intervisti differenti illi għamiltu l-snin ma' nies barranin illi jew missew ma' Malta jew joqogħdu hawnhekk jew kienu joqogħdu hawnhekk għal xi perjodu. Forsi tafu li jiena dilettant tal-qasam tal-karozzi klassiċi u l-kuntatti tiegħi tul-snin irriżultaw f'intervisti ma' ġurnalisti jew prezentaturi televiżivi fil-qasam tal-karozzi klassiċi, partikolarment fil-Renju Unit. L-assistent editur ta' żewġ rivisti importanti Ingliżi li jinbijaw madwar id-dinja, Classic and Thoroughbred Cars u Practical Classics, James Walsh li kien mistieden f'pajjiżna mill-Grand Prix Klassika tal-Imdina ftit ta' snin ilu, tant kienet oġbitu Malta li kien reġaġi għal darba darbtej u verament ħabieċir bix-xena tal-karozzi klassiċi għaw Malta imma kif ukoll il-ħbiberiji illi forma hawnhekk ma' nies Maltin fosthom miegħi. Hawnhekk kont kellimtu meta kont qed inwaslu l-airport ftit ta' snin ilu l-ewwel darba li kien ġi Malta, jgħidilna wkoll xi ftit dwar l-esperjenzi tiegħu meta kien jaħdem il-BBC Radio 2 bħala producer.
Here we are, we're driving around, where are we?
Hamrun
in Malta, having a lovely time, and delicious coffee. Your coffee here in Malta is absolutely phenomenal. It's so good, it's one of the highlights of my trip, I think. We don't have coffee like your coffee in the UK.
So, James, could you just give us a bit of background about yourself, who you are and what you do?
Sure, I'm James Walsh. I am deputy editor of Britain's biggest-selling classic car magazine, Practical Classics. I've been a writer for the magazine for about 5 years. My background is in radio. I used to work for the BBC as a producer, making radio programmes for Radio 2 in the United Kingdom. I really love classic cars. I grew up in the UK in a Citroën family. My father always drove Citroëns and Saabs. He's a design engineer, so basically I think that's where his love of Citroën and Saab comes from, because those cars are very interesting from an engineering perspective and design. So his love of the car and of aircraft and technology and engineering led me to always take an interest. And when I was a teenager, I always wanted to be able to write about cars. But unfortunately, I left school, went to college, and sort of fell into radio. So I ended up in radio and didn't pursue the career that I'd always dreamed of as a writer, writing about vehicles, about cars.
When you were on radio especially, but also in your current job, perhaps our listeners would like to hear about some of the famous people that you might have met.
Sure. Well, certainly in the United Kingdom, in radio, when I worked in radio, we would have visitors from rock bands, from pop bands. We would go to concerts. We would do interviews with various actors, sometimes British actors, sometimes Hollywood actors. And it would be quite normal to go to work in London and be stood in the elevator going up to the studios, standing with Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, or Barry Manilow, or Michael Bublé. You know, it was quite normal, and some of those conversations were quite awkward when you were stuck in a lift with Celine Dion. So, you know, these things, strange things happen, but I feel very lucky to have met some of these people. And, you know, yeah, there's some people, some celebrities, some singers, some actors and actresses can be awkward, shall we say. Okay. Interesting characters, that's more appropriate. Interesting characters.
Can you tell us the best interview you produced or arranged, and perhaps the most awkward?
Yeah, I have to be very careful with some of the names, you know. I don't want to get sued, and I don't want you to get sued either. I have to say, rock people are, I think, the nicest people. So, rock stars. Pop stars, the ones that are more, shall we say, I don't mind saying, the Britney Spears, the more diva-type characters, are a little more demanding when they come in to be interviewed. Sometimes Mariah Carey, you know. Actually, I haven't had any dealings with Mariah Carey. I know one of my colleagues did have very interesting conversation with Mariah Carey, which was very awkward. But, you know, most of the time people are really great. They're really normal. They don't deserve the bad reputation that they have. And certainly when I met Shirley Bassey, and I'm guessing that Shirley Bassey is is someone that everyone knows. You know, this is a name.
One of my father's favourites.
One of your father's favourites. Well, there we go, you know. So Shirley Bassey is a legend, you know. She's an icon. And I was really worried about meeting her because, as a producer, it's my job to make sure that she's okay, that we bring her to the radio station and we make sure that she has the drink that she'd like, and if she's hungry, we'll find some food for her. And hospitality is an important part of your job as a producer. And then you take them into the studio, sit them down, and introduce them to the presenter, who then puts the microphone up, and they're on air, and they have the conversation. So it's really important to make them feel welcome. Yeah. And in Shirley's case, she was amazing, because she came in to the radio station and was really down to earth. And she said to me, "Darling," she says, "darling, don't fuss over me. Don't fuss over me. I'm very happy to just go along with things. I'm very down to earth. I don't want to be fussed over. So just get me a water and I'll be happy." You know, and I thought that was really nice. It was quite refreshing. Later that night, we went to her record company, her album launch. Mm-hmm. So she was releasing a new album. And it was an album involving collaborations with other artists. I think it was about 10 years ago, and she'd teamed up with the Manic Street Preachers, with Gary Barlow of Take That, you know. So this album was a really important album to her because she teamed up with some contemporary artists. And the album launch, of course, was at the Ritz in London. Very posh, very exciting. She, of course, looked incredible in an amazing dress, and, you know, everyone turned up. But at one point, I was very lucky to be invited to the record label launch, because at the time I was producing quite a big program, and I took the presenter with me, and the pair of us went to this record launch to be a part of it as invited guests. And at one point I was sat at the roulette wheel with Shirley Bassey on one side and Gary Barlow on the other side, talking about the pets we had when we were kids. And, you know, learning about, just having a normal conversation. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, even Shirley Bassey, the likes of a superstar like Shirley Bassey, is a normal human being. And as a producer, in my position, you don't get to feel cool very often, because your job is is behind the scenes. And it's the presenter, like yourself, who gets all the glory, all the money, all the glory. Oh, you know, I'm joking. I know the reality of working on the radio. All the chocolate, yes. But as a producer, you don't get to feel like that often. And so it's so nice when someone like Dame Shirley Bassey remembers your name. And it made me feel like my job was worthwhile. You know, it was a nice feeling.
You're a big fan of travelling. It's almost more important than cars and music in your life.
Travelling is the most important thing to me in my life, you know. I mean, we're sitting in a car right now and we're on the move and we're going to see a new place and we're passing all of these fields and businesses and houses, and I find it just fascinating, and we're going past the cemetery right now. I find myself happiest when I'm on the move, when I'm seeing new places. It's all very nice being in a place where there are lots of tourists and fellow Brits and other nationalities. But to me, the most important thing about travel, and certainly coming here to Malta, is to come to the towns where the Maltese live, where people live, real people, not tourists. And I know tourism is a very important part of for Malta, and it is a wonderful place to come and visit for a holiday. To me, it's lovely to sit beside the pool or go for a swim in the sea, but it's equally as important to me to understand how Malta works and to meet real people and go to cafes just like the one we went to, and sit in the street and watch the world go by, because it's such an exciting thing to see a new place. But you can only see that new place, I think, if you explore, if you step away from the pool, if you step away from the beach and you go to the towns and cities. And I've been all over the world, and I do the same thing wherever I go around the world, and it's a real thrill for me to go to New York and go and wander around Hell's Kitchen, or get on a bus and explore an area where tourists don't go.
You've been to China as well and other places, yeah?
So yeah, China's really interesting, you know. I mean, it's like another world sometimes. You know, India is another world. You have to sort of adapt quite carefully to each of these places to ensure that you are paying attention to local customs and you're being respectful of those. You know, I know that we British sometimes stomp around the world thinking like we own it, you know, and it's unfortunate that some people still exist and they go to countries and expect everyone to speak English and don't try and speak the language. I've tried to speak Maltese, by the way.
Have you?
And I'm terrible. I really tried. I want you to know that I really tried hard to learn some Maltese, and it's a really difficult language. No, see, this is how bad I am.
But you've only been here 3 days.
I've just been here 3 days, yeah, so I haven't had the chance to speak. But I've been I've taken a few taxis and buses and had some great conversations with taxi drivers and bus drivers and people in Malta to try and get better at my Maltese language, but I'm afraid I'm a failure.
Tell us a little bit about your job at the magazine.
My job right now is deputy editor of Practical Classics magazine. It's a car magazine that's been running in the UK since 1980. It's available in Malta, and we hope you enjoy it. And if you don't, please tell us if you don't, because, you know, we appreciate all the feedback.
We sometimes feature Malta in bits, spotted or...
Yes, I know. We have readers who come on holiday to Malta. Mm-hmm. And they send us pictures of the cars in Malta. So, you know, Malta does feature in the magazine from time to time. But the magazine is all about the joy of owning classic cars. The classic car community in Britain is a really friendly. The great thing about owning a classic car in Britain is that there are some amazing clubs and everyone sticks together and looks after each other, helps each other find parts. And, you know, I've noticed that when I've been in Malta, there's a real sense of camaraderie that people support each other here. Whether you have a Bentley or an Aston Martin or a Mini, it doesn't matter. Everyone loves classic cars and is here to help each other. And it's a really special thing. And I think that's something that Malta celebrates really well.
And yes, tell us more about your impressions of Malta in general and also the Malta classic car scene.
I'll tell you what, as a Brit coming here, who grew up in the late 1970s and the 1980s, my goodness, the cars that you see here, for me, it's so exciting to look around and see these amazing cars in back streets. It's just regular cars, from old Ford Fiestas to Morris Minors, Morris Marinas, Skodas. You know, these cars have disappeared from British roads. They've all disappeared now because of the rain, because of the salt. They all rusted away. So to come to Malta, to me, it's so exciting to see so many everyday cars. You know, I love E-types and Jaguars of all sorts, Bentleys, Rolls Royce. They're lovely to see. But, you know, to see both sides of the classic car scene here is really important. So, yeah, for me, looking at the everyday cars, what we would call street furniture in Britain, the things that we would see every day growing up. But the Endina Classic is astonishing. It's like no classic car event I've ever been to. It's so special for two reasons, I think. Firstly, the cars are remarkable. We went to the Concours, saw the racing, the immaculate cars, the immaculate nature of the cars, the condition of them. They have been so well restored and so well maintained. They are just beautiful. The second is are the owners. So the owners contribute to the other reason for loving that event as I do, because it doesn't matter again what car they own. They are all really, really happy to talk about the car. You can see how passionate they are about the car, and you can have great conversations, and the warmth and hospitality and good nature that you get from each of the owners, whether they own a Mini or an Aston Martin, it doesn't matter. These guys are they all love their cars, and they will talk to you, and they won't talk to you about profit or the amount of money they've made by selling cars. It's some festivals, some car shows in the world you go to, and that's what it's about. But the Malta Classic is not about investment or making money. These guys just loved their cars. And it was a real thrill to speak to owners of various different cars, from Jaguar XK120s to the Hillman Imp. It was wonderful. Such a special event. And look at the location. What an incredible Mdina. Place. Mdina is, wow. I mean, it just doesn't get better.
Are you going to be writing about the event or Malta? Or the
I will be, yes.
Here,
so I'm
classics in the future.
I'm here to write about the Mdina Classic, the Malta Classic. It's an incredible event. I'm here to write about that event. But also, I'm going to add to that, because I'm going to talk about two things. I'm going to write about two other things in the article. And that is, firstly, the cars that were built here in Malta. We went to the old factory site
in Marsa.
Mm-hmm. We were able to see where the cars were made. And there's, it doesn't resemble it how it was. It's a very different kind of business now at the factory site. But we assembled a couple of cars there. Very kindly, some people, some car enthusiasts in Malta brought their cars to be seen, organised by Frank. Frank was a great guy. Frank and his Morris Marina came down and he brought his friends with the Maltese Cross badge, I mean, this to me is fascinating to see these cars that were so familiar to me that were built here, proudly built here in Malta and proudly driven by this group of people. And they've come here to the factory site to... celebrate Malta's car building history. And it was really interesting because each person has a different reason for loving their car. The guy who loved his Triumph Spitfire has a different reason for liking his car to the guy with the guy who likes his Hillman Hunter. So that was a really great thing to do.
And tell us about your impressions of Malta outside the car aspect.
Yeah,
as a big traveller.
As a traveller, the thing that strikes me about Malta is the warmth and hospitality that you find here, that people are really friendly. I know, during the week it's difficult because we've been through to some of the working areas of Malta where everyone's really busy and, they're working hard and it's kind of almost feels to me like chaos. But then when I go to London, it's the same. People are busy and they're doing stuff. They're earning a living and they're working really hard doing that. And they're really... it's to be admired. And the last thing those people want is for me to start wandering through their work zones because they're busy. But when you are lost and you need to find somewhere and, you stop and ask someone and they will always help you. Mm-hmm. People here are really generous and kind and helpful. And I found that wherever you are, the hotel I was staying at, they were brilliant. They were very helpful. The tourist board were very helpful. Everybody here has been just great. And the people I've met through Classic Cars have been very keen to help me as well. So when I've asked them about their car, they've told me about someone else, their friend, and their car. You must go and see them and they will make you a coffee. And it's really nice. Everyone's so friendly.
Anything really spectacular that... really floored you, that one of the cars you saw or met?
There's a guy who I think he's amazing, this guy. His name is Anthony. And Anthony bought a Jaguar, the sort of Jaguar that is probably out of reach for most of us. It's a really valuable Jaguar. But, he saved a lot and he spent his career building boats. And, he worked really hard his whole life and he retired and decided that he wanted to buy the car of his dreams. And so he did. And unfortunately, it didn't go to plan because he bought the car from America and it was very difficult because the guy, I think, was a bit of a con man. And so he spent a long time trying to get the car to Malta. And when the car finally arrived here in Malta, I think Anthony had lost heart with the car. I think there was a feeling that it had been such a traumatic experience for him to get the car here. But bit by bit... helped by his wife Greta, she encouraged him to think about the car again, and he started working on the car a little bit here and a little bit there, one day here, one day there, and he began to warm to the car again. And so, rather than send this Jaguar XK120 to someone else to restore, Anthony decided to restore the car himself. And so he worked really hard to restore the car himself, doing all the woodwork, all the bodywork, the interior, retrimming the seats. He worked really, really hard to get that car back on the road. And just a few days before the Malta Classic, the car was complete. And he got the car to the event, to the Concours, and won People's Choice at the event. And I think that's a fine, fine reason to celebrate, a fine place to celebrate. Yeah, I think he's a hero. People like him amaze me because they have such determination to get their cars fixed. We had such a nice time, a really good conversation, talking about how he restored his car and his hopes to get the car finished by Christmas, but he did it sooner. His determination meant that the car was finished before the event.
James Walsh, deputat editur ta' żewġ rivisti importanti fil-qasam tal-karozzi fir-Renju Unit, mingħajrejn barranin illum programm kemm xejn differenti xorta preżentat minni Colin Fitz hawnhekk fuq Campus 103.7 li konkludi hawnhekk għallum li spera li sibtu dawn l-intervisti varjati, interessanti, sibt li kien importanti illi naqgħad dawn l-intervisti li forsi kienu nsemgħu darba biss fil-qasam tax-xandir ta' Campus 103.7 u jkun tajjeb illi naqgħad siltiet minn dawn l-intervisti u jinaqdu fi programm wieħed fis-sensi la minn għajnejn barranin Malta Drew International Eyes. Li tinsewx tistgħu tisabgħu ukoll minn fuq is-sit elettroniku tagħna għaliex wara li x-xandar il-programm mbagħad wara ġimgħa 15 jittella fuq is-sit elettroniku ta' Campus 103.7.